Welcome to the Booktopia podcast. I'm Emily Meredith and I'm here with John Purcell and Richard Roxburgh, who has written a fantastic new kids book, Artie and the Grime Wave.
Welcome, Richard.
Lovely to be here.
We get a lot of authors through and we're very excited when we get debut authors in, as you are, especially ones that start writing later in life. I wouldn't say, over 40, taking on writing, it's a big thing for anyone to do. And writing for children, a terrifying thing for anyone to do. It's a challenging area of the book publishing industry, is getting the kids through. Where did this desire to write come from, and what were you doing before the writing bug took you?
Well, I was really reading books to my boys, who are now 9 and 6, at bedtime, and it just got me thinking, and I suppose got me remembering the books that had been so integral, so kind of key when I was a kid, and how impactful they were. And in particular, it was adventure stories. So for me, it was the kind of Mark Twain's and the Roald Dahl's. And I just remembered how beautiful and how instructive and important they were. And I just started thinking, look, I'd love to write to that. I'd love to make a contribution. And because I guess I just wanted to a little adventure myself, and to see how, you know, it wasn't necessarily going to go anywhere. I didn't know where it was going to go. I didn't know if it was going to have a publisher or whatever, and that wasn't really the point. So that's how it started.
And blank pages are terrifying to a lot of writers. And when you set out to write a story, did you have any notion that you're going to write a volume, like a novel, rather than just a kid's picture book? It does take time, a lot of time to write a book. Did you have any notion of I'm going to set aside this much of my life to do this?
I sort of did. I mean, I knew the age of the kids that I'd be appealing to, so I knew that it would be a novel. I knew it would be a chapter book for 8 to 12-year-olds, so I knew it wasn't going to be, you know, a picture book for 5-year-olds. And the reason for that was really that I was just loving so much the stories that I was reading to my older boy, because I was finding them as entertaining as he was. So there's a moment in time in which you just, you know, you come across the kind of genius of Roald Dahl or Twain and or writers of their ilk, and you just the joy in the literature of it, the joy in the fun of it, the joy in the childhood spirit of it, is so strong that it really, I found that intoxicating, and that was what carried me along, really. I didn't find the sort of threat of the empty page such a terrifying thing. I'm a badly disorganized human, and so I needed to write, what I knew I needed to do was to write a very, very strong plot. To write it a very strong process, chapter by chapter, and to know where it was all going to go. And having done that, the exercise of writing became a kind of really pleasurable thing that I love, because it was like just filling in all the colour and detail.
So would you tell us a little bit about the story?
Artie is a boy who is... he's 12 years old, he's having a very difficult life. We learn that his father has died some years before. His father was an incredibly brave circus performer. And he just died of a sort of, you know, terrible illness that we don't really go into detail about. His mother since then has retreated into a kind of agoraphobic cave. And you see then that he's in a disastrous home life. And he's making, as kids do, the best of it. So he's there with his best friend, Bum Shoe, and you soon learn that they're the type of boys who tend to get bullied at school as well. So there are the bad bullying kids in the picture. And Bum Shoe and Artie happen upon a cave. And inside the cave, there's a whole lot of apparently stolen stuff. And the story goes from there. And we, in attempting to prove that the cave is indeed full of stolen things. The boys come up with an idea, which in turn leads them into the grip of a terrible and quite eccentric gang of thieves. And Artie is forced along the way to come to terms with his greatest fear, which is really the fear of adventure, because he feels that life is complicated enough as it is, given the nature of his life, without adding on unnecessary scary bits. So there's also quite an important coming of age element to it as well.
Now, one of the things I really loved while I was reading it were all the really random names, such as Bumshoe, and there's Auntie Boy, there's Funnel Web, there's Wart. Why did you choose those particular funny names?
Well, I think you have to think like a kid, really, when you're writing when you're writing kids' books. You have to reach out to what will tickle them, and it certainly used to be something that tickled me when I was reading something and somebody had a really fun name. So I suppose there was a part of it that was that. There's a great deal of my hometown in this story. There's a great deal of Albury Wodonga, and my own life growing up in a town with a river flowing through it. To the extent that, some of the place names, Nail Can Hill and so on, are all actual places in my hometown. So there's a spirit of Albury in there as well. And when I was growing up, there were kids who had names, I guess, like the nicknames like that. So there's a part of that as well.
Excellent. So it's a really, really wacky story. And I was wondering if your experience as an actor had influenced any of the plotting at all.
I don't know if my experience as an actor influenced the plotting. I think what it did influence was the creation of the characters, so that along the way I would find myself, in a sense, preparing a character for the page in much the same way as I would prepare a character for the stage or for screen or whatever. So that you kind of flesh out the details of that character and think, well, he could talk like that, or he could have this this mannerism, and what can I add to that that's going to be sort of additionally creepy and wonderful to entertain my childhood readers. So there was an overlap there, I think, with my other career.
It's interesting, Lisa Genova, who wrote the book that Julianne Moore starred in the movie with the Alzheimer's.
Finding Alice.
Yeah. She actually has taken acting classes. As a novelist, has actually gone out and taken acting classes to try and get more of an idea of character.
I think it's a great idea. There's nothing I find more troubling in my life as a reader than stumbling across terrible dialogue.
Yeah.
And I still do. I mean, I read a book last year that I ended up just kind of hurling across the room because the dialogue, and it was quite a popular book. The dialogue was ostensibly, it got the point across, but it was just dreadful because I can feel rhythmically, I suppose, if something has a sense of reality to it or not. And although the characters, you write, and the plot is quite wacky, it's quite a heightened plot, nonetheless, the dialogue has to have something about it that still is anchored in reality and rings true. Otherwise, nobody's going to engage with it.
Now, you illustrate the book as well. And I wanted to know if there's anything in the creative arts that you can't do.
Legendarily not a great dancer.
Okay.
My wife assures me that I can sing, but that's as yet strongly untested. So that's something that will remain in the shower as well. There's a great many things that I'm incapable of. As I've mentioned before, organisation is a big weakness, and I'm also entirely innumerate. So things, for instance, in working on the illustrations, the matter of having to sort of format those to particular ratios and page sizes was a kind of whole new drama for me.
Okay.
And I think provided many hours of entertainment for the poor people of Allen and Unwin.
And I found the illustrations to be a little bit Quentin Blake cross Tim Burton. And I was wondering if you had any particular influences on your drawing style.
Oh, look, I think I've had so many along the way. I've always loved ink cartoon drawings. And I mean, to even be in the same sort of breath as Quentin Blake is an enormous compliment, because he's just the master. Yeah, so beautiful what he does, because he will do a never-ending single line, and then a brush stroke with a brush, and that's it. So he's like a sort of Zen master of childhood drawing. So beautiful. But there's really been a lot of influences, and I've always loved it. I loved Lunik to pieces when I was growing up. I really loved his work, because there's also a sort of melancholy to it. It's really substantial. There's a great deal in it. I think probably my favourite cartoonist of all time is a sadly obscure Malaysian cartoonist called Lat, whose work can now only be found in sort of Amazon. So I discovered one online that I had to send away for, and it ended up arriving, and it was from the library in Calgary in Canada. So he's very hard to get now, but I've read that to my boys, and his work is incredible.
Talking about your boys, kids can be rather honest. What was the first showing of Artie and the Grime Wave to your kids like? Were they that's nice work, Dad. How did it go down? That's a terrifying audience to go to.
It is, but they were very much my go-to editors along the way.
Do they get an acknowledgement?
Oh yes, they really do get an acknowledgement. I mean, they really were, and in particular my oldest boy, because he was right in the sort of sweet spot for the age that I was writing for. I would always test run chapters by him. And there was a moment in time when I went right off piste, and I was reading these chapters to him, and I could tell he was kind of, you know, fiddling and playing with stuff and glazing over, and I was getting more and more alarmed by this. And finally I said, you know, how do you think that's going there? How's that working for you? And he was, you know, he was terrific. He was very honest and very diplomatic, but in no uncertain terms, he let me know that I had gone it off topic and it wasn't working. And so I took the note.
Whew.
Did they have favourite moments?
Yeah, they do. I mean, they have. I mean, they especially love the hijinks of the character of Auntie Boy. They love the interaction with the bad guys. There are moments that they still sort of laugh out loud at when the bad guys become suddenly art critics. At one point, they find that enormously entertaining. So yeah, there are particular moments that always seem to tickle them.
And is there one bit in particular you're most proud of? The creation that makes you smile?
It's a good question. I don't really know about that. What I hoped for was that the book would also have an emotional heartbeat, so that it was important to me that it wasn't just a wacky thing, that it also was about a boy who prevails, a boy who goes through something incredibly difficult and comes out the other side, and facing what is ostensibly his worst fear, he masters something, he gets over something, and in so doing, he also manages to you know, without giving them too much of the plot away, he manages to create a much better, happier, fabulous home life again. So, I think there were moments that I found genuinely moving to write, and I suppose they're things that bizarrely harken back to your own childhood, because it is remarkable, even in something that is as kind of wayward and nutty as Artie and the Grime Wave, there are elements in the story that are, you know, drawn from your own life, always.
Is there, as a bookseller, I'd like you to write more, and I'm sure the publisher is leaning on you for more. Is there pressure to write more in a series of Artie, or have you got ideas in your head and you want to go off and explore in whole other areas, or, I mean, is there a second book, or is this it? You got out of your system, you're done, I've done my children's book, I'm out.
Oh, no, definitely not. I mean, I'm working as we speak on another book. Don't want to give too much away. It doesn't. I don't know if it's going to be a sequel as such. It's there may be overlaps at this point. I'm not entirely sure. But there's definitely another book or books in the works. Yeah.
Well, we've had there is a space within the Australian market for someone to be as successful as someone like David Walliams in the UK, because David Walliams's books are doing enormous things, and I wonder if it is something tied up with that creative side, that acting side, where you have to get into character, fully into character, and to sort of work it out and then put it on the page. Whether that lends itself to writing for children's books and can give an added advantage for authors who have had that other experience, because he seems to his books are very Roald Dahl-ish, over the top. Kind of things, but they're never really taken in the big way they're done in the UK, in Australia, and maybe it needs an Australian setting to have that.
It's an interesting thing that it seems to be the case that there are quite a few children's book authors who were actors at some point. I mean, I know Aaron Blaby.
Yeah.
I remember Aaron Blaby from earlier times around Belvoir Street, and he was a terrific actor. And so I guess there is something in the matter of the kind of play, the child's play, that is an element of what you do in your work as an actor, that you have to constantly keep the child alive in you in some way as an actor, that may help that transition to writing kids' books. And there is also the matter of creating characters, because it's certainly in the case of, you look at David Walliams' books and there's these wonderful, always these wonderful characters, and then you look at his work in Little Britain and you think, well, it's all there, really.
Yeah.
There were so many characters in Artie and the Grime Wave. Did you have a particular favourite to write?
Interesting.
Can aside from Artie.
interesting. I don't know if I had a favourite to write, really. I actually, weirdly, you would have thought it probably would have been Artie Boy, because she's really so eccentric and so specific in her eccentricities, because she's essentially based on my own aunt that I grew up with and who lived one block from my high school, much to my sort of torture as an adolescent boy, when she used to bail up my friends and any high school students on their way to school and clack out her dentures at them and speaking rhymes and jigs. And she was famously known as Miss Roxburgh, so there was no hiding from it, and it was awful. But she was just such a great cartoon character. But weirdly, I actually found her quite difficult to translate to the page. Because she really did just used to sort of speak in rhymes. And so I had to take liberties with her own character to make it fit. I guess I had a lot of fun with my most evil doers. So I really did have fun with Funnelweb and especially, I suppose, the really kind of daffy or extreme ones. So Wart was a great joy. The acrimonious relationship between Wart and his as the henchman of Nate, I found a great pleasure to write. And the awful and hideous Janie Grime, who is the sort of muscle-bound ogress who turns out to be worse than all of them. I love writing her.
She definitely ended up being my favourite. Right.
There were some weapons in this book, and before parents run a mile and say, "Oh my God, there's weapons in this book," can you describe, without giving too much away, is there any way of talking about these weapons?
Well, they're weapons that have been invented by Auntie Boy. So they have that they are less probably lethal and more eccentric in nature. And although if you encountered them in real life, they probably would be quite scary. There's enough of the eccentricity to them to the render them pretty funny. There's the Fartex 120Y, which is my favourite. Based on the car that I learned to drive in Albury, which was my sister's Datsun.
Datsun, of course.
So yes, look, there's a lot of fun with Auntie's weapons, and they're put to good use in the book.
Absolutely.
Richard, thank you very much for joining us.
My absolute pleasure.
Thank you.
It was great. Thanks, guys.
Richard's debut author, Richard Roxburgh's new book, Party in the Grime Wave, is available from booktopia.com.au right now.
Thanks for listening to the Booktopia podcast. And don't forget to subscribe to us on SoundCloud and iTunes. And if your eyeballs need a workout, check us out on YouTube at Booktopia TV. And don't forget, for all books featured on this episode and all episodes of the Booktopia podcast, head to Booktopia, Australia's local bookstore, at www.booktopia.com.au. Thanks for listening.